This is Greg Lozinski, and you're listening to Baseball BBQ.
Music's podcast, and you're listening to Jeff and Len on Baseball and Barbecue, one of my favorite podcasts, and I know it's one of yours too. The only problem is, after I get done listening to it, I'm hungry. All right, guys, take it away.
Welcome to a very special episode, a holiday episode. It's episode 113 of Baseball and Barbecue. I'm here with the Santa Claus of all Baseball and Barbecue hosts, Jeff Santa Claus Cohen.
And I'm here with one of the elves, Leonard Averman.
As long as I'm not a Grinch, that's okay.
Right.
Jeff. You know, it's I don't realize. Let me ask you this: when we don't record, it's no mystery. It's no secret that it's been we missed a week. You know, it was Thanksgiving. We didn't actually. We had an episode before that, but we didn't record. I miss it. I really do.
Yeah.
You know, so I find that as I'm listening to the interviews that we're going to be releasing on this episode. I really miss it. What about you?
Yeah, but fasten your seatbelts because we're doing a lot of recordings for the rest of the month. So fasten your seatbelts.
Fasten them tight.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about, first of all, we open with the holiday song. That song just, Charlie Brown Christmas, you know, but that song just really represents the holidays. And I think it's going to be a very happy holiday for the Hodges family. Would you like to explain?
Congratulations to the Hodges family. Gil Hodges finally voted into the Hall of Fame from one of the veterans committees. And it was just a joy to see him go in. A lot of people pushing for him, including you and I on this podcast, mm-hmm. including some of our friends in the podcast world.
Yes.
Stan, Mike, and Rich of the Metsian podcast, Gary Mack of Bet Mets Musings. We've interviewed some of the players. We've interviewed Gil Hodges' daughter. And it was just very gratifying that some of that effort paid off. And I'm sure our podcast had a lot to do with him getting the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I'm sure it pushed it over the edge, of course.
But we did get the word. Look, we did get the word out that it was listened to all over the world. Via social media was sent to the Hall of Fame. So maybe they listened to it, maybe they didn't, but we you know, he's in the Hall of Fame, and that's all that matters. So congratulations to the Hodges family, long overdue.
Yeah, and we had Irene Hodges on, and I know now that she is a loyal listener to this show. What a special person. Irene, we really think you're the best. Congratulations. It's just... We're sorry that you had to wait so long for it to happen, but it's nice that something that was wrong for so long has finally been righted, if that's the way to even say it.
Yes, but. And the Hall of Fame is a better place because Gil Hodges is going to be inducted come summer 2022 into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Absolutely, absolutely. And not only that, Jeff, we also know that Buck O'Neill, formerly of the Negro Baseball League,
mm-hmm.
and Bud Fowler.
Bud Fowler, yes.
Okay. Are both also going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Along with Minnie Minoso, mm-hmm. who's no longer with us. But we have two living Hall of Famers. Jim Cott has been voted in, and along with Tony Oliva of the Minnesota Twins. So that was great to see. So there'll be at least six people voted in through the veterans committees into the Baseball Hall of Fame come summer 2022. And right now, as of this recording, the writer's ballot of the Hall of Fame is going on now. So we'll see what that brings.
Yes, we will. But either no matter what happens with that, we know that it's going to be a great ceremony.
Absolutely.
Come July 24th of 2022 in Cooperstown, New York.
Well said. Yes.
Today, whenever you're listening to this, of course, we're recording in the evening, so I say tonight, we have two interviews that you guys will really enjoy, but the one that I think you guys are going to really love.
Let me just say this. Go ahead. We're recording on December 9th. We're a week into the baseball lockout, and who knows how long that will last. Fortunately, I think it's going to last longer than most people think. But we want to bring some joy during this lockout. So we have with us, I'm going to give a little impression, and you're going to tell us who it is. Okay? Here it goes.
Oh, I'm ready for this. Jeff is going to do an impression. This is a rarity, so let's go.
Who is that, Len?
That was one of the Three Stooges.
But it also is... a famous okay. mascot.
Yes, it is the San Diego Chicken. I don't know why I sang that, but yes, Ted Giannoulis. Jeff, boy, was he good.
Oh, it was great.
Oh, I listened to that because I liked it. You know, I always like to be prepared when we come on and just he was fantastic. I mean, just talking, reminiscing and just everything that he talked about in this interview, guys, he talks about working with Ted Williams on the baseball bunch, Ozzie Smith. He talks about Andre Dawson, the Hawk, and he says, the Hawk and the Chicken. There were so many Hall of Famers on that baseball bunch.
Oh, yeah. And the famous Tommy Lasorda story.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he's almost responsible for ending it for Tommy Lasorda many years early. And he almost caused a national with Russia. He almost caused
an incident.
He almost, yeah, an incident with Russia. I don't want to say any more about it. You guys, one of the most entertaining interviews I think we've had on this show.
Yes.
I think you're really going to like it.
And who else?
And then, of course, we have Randall Thompson of Dugout Mugs.
Holiday season, gift-giving season.
Yes, and he will talk about what they have to offer. Jeff, you own one of the Dugout Mugs.
I do.
And you bought it. You actually purchased it. It was not a gift.
Nope.
They are beautiful. We will speak to him. But he was not funny.
Ted was the funny one. I should put it that way.
Ted was very funny and just a pleasure. And then you guys listen to the whole interview through, because at the end, I forgot that he said something about chickens and barbecue that you will really find funny. So enjoy. We'll talk to you when the interview's over. Here is the San Diego Chicken, Ted.
Whoa. Our guest has played with some of the greatest players in Major League Baseball, and yet has never pitched a single ball or had an official plate appearance in a game. When it comes to bringing joy to fans of sports, whether it's baseball, hockey, basketball, or football, this is someone who is in a league of their own. For more than 40 years, we have had the pleasure of watching this truly great and creative entertainer. We are extremely honored, and I mean extremely honored, to welcome Ted Giannoulis, a.k.a. the San Diego Chicken, to Baseball and Barbecue. Welcome, Ted. We couldn't be happy to have you.
Yeah, bok, 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 bok. Leonard and Jeff, thank you very much for having me on. I'm honored by the very kind words you've said. Thank you.
Jeff, the list of... I don't even know where to begin. So
okay,
I'm going to start. I'm just going to say to all of our listeners, if you want to start to see the creativity and the genius of this guest, you have got to watch YouTube. You will spend hours on YouTube. You will laugh until you will wet your pants. You seriously will. All right, Jeff. Please go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ted, for joining us. Yeah, Len said it right. I mean, you've been entertaining us for so many years. It's been just a pleasure watching and a pleasure to talk to you. I have a question. I'm going to start off with this. You definitely one of the best mascots of all time, and you actually went to the same high school as one of the best hitters of all time, Ted Williams.
Yes.
What a coincidence. You were born in Canada, so how'd you make your way down to San Diego?
Yes, I was born in London, Ontario, and born to Greek immigrant parents. And about 1969, I immigrated to San Diego with my parents. My dad had come down to visit my godparents here, and he fell in love with the city, the weather especially, and of course the ocean. It all reminded him of his native Athens. And he went back, told my mom, he says, we got to move there. Now, he came down here in the mid-60s. So we applied, waited for our green cards, finally got them. And we moved down here in 69 as a result. And just, I tell you, it's the weather here is different than the rest of the weather, even in California. And so that's how we settled in San Diego. And I went to Hoover High School, of all things. I was we lived in the neighborhood. So I was assigned to Hoover High School. And there in the hallway, a gigantic picture of Ted Williams in his rookie year in Boston. And being a big baseball fan, I was pretty excited, needless to say. The great Ted Williams walked these very halls and even spoke to some of these teachers. Unbelievable. And so it was quite a moving moment for an impressionable Canadian kid at the time being at Hoover. So, yeah, it was quite a surreal experience, to say the least.
As the chicken, did you ever have dealings, interactions with Ted Williams?
Yes, believe it or not, I did a TV show with Johnny Bench. We co-hosted a program in the early to mid 80s called The Baseball Bunch.
Love
kid
it.
Show,
yes.
Saturday morning kid show.
Mm-hmm.
And it won 3 Emmy Awards, by the way, I'm proud to say. And so Ted Williams loved that show so much that he voluntarily called up the producers and asked if he could be on the program. Needless to say, we went nuts.
Sure.
And so he came and paid a visit. And you got to know, Ted Williams back in the day refused to even do interviews. And so for him to say, I want to be a part of that show, he came on. He couldn't have been more gracious, more kind, and great with the kids, and told great stories. And of course, inside baseball. And Johnny was just out of his mind. Ted Williams was here on the Little League field that we were shooting this show on. And so it was really something. And I got to talk to Ted and got a couple of autographs on baseballs, by the way, and told him I was from Hoover, and told him how proud Hoover must be that they had a Hall of Famer and also a Hall of Shamer, you know, who walked the same halls.
Did he ever see you out of costume?
Yes. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. And when we were off camera and off the set, yeah, he was absolutely great. I mean, he loved the show, and he loved Johnny. And for those who don't know, we would have a featured guest every week on the program, normally a contemporary ball player, an all-star usually. And they would come on and talk about their positions and stories growing up and so forth. And the show would teach kids the proper techniques, the baseball. And so Ted and I, as Ted was a guest on that one week, and yeah, we talked It was very, very exciting for everyone, including the kids who weren't quite sure at the time who Ted Williams was, but they were filled in and obviously got pretty excited. And I got to say, Ted did not like signing autographs, but I don't recall him declining a single moment on that set for anyone who wanted an autograph.
That's great.
You know, we bounce a lot around a lot on this show, and if we were doing it the right way, we should go to the beginning and how you started. But if I don't concentrate right now on the baseball bunch, I know that this interview will go by and I'll never get back to it. So the baseball bunch YouTube is such a great resource. I was watching an episode with Ozzie Smith and it was the Wizard of Oz, and he was teaching. He actually was teaching how to field ground balls. He was teaching this kid have the glove go forward instead of taking a ground ball and having your glove go back on the ground, go forward. And what a great tip that was. And then the next thing you know, he used his magic and there was a wall. And you were on one side of the wall,
yeah.
And you had a stepladder, and you were trying to get over the wall.
Yes,
it was a riot. How was you were on that show with all these greats? I mean, Johnny Bench, Ozzie Smith, like you said, Ted Williams. I know Gary Carter was on that show.
Yep,
and on. It must have been as a baseball fan. It must have just been an incredible experience. To, like you said, Ted Williams, great to be with. What was it like to be with all of these the players?
Just amazing. Cal Ripken was on there, Pete Rose, Mike Schmidt, Raleigh Fingers. These are a who's who of the day. And it got to be such a popular show among baseball people that everyone wanted to be on it. The only guy we didn't get, unfortunately, for the program was Reggie Jackson. And Reggie, at the time, believe it or not, wanted more money than the show was paying. And the show was only paying an honorarium to all of these stars showing up. And the production just didn't have it. And so he was the only guy that really declined being on the program. But everyone else was, it was just amazing that they would come on. I'll tell you a little side story. Andre Dawson was the only superstar who came on the program that knew every line in the script that was sent to him. Okay. Bless his heart. He knew every line, the Hawk. It was the Hawk versus the Chicken one episode. And he knew every line in the script, because normally when these players show up, they have a general overview. The script is sent to them and they have a general overview and the line is fed to them, you know, during off camera, and they know it, and then they know what to do. And some of it was ad-libbed as well. But Andre would know everything. And we were so pleased that taping went really quick. but all the players were fantastic and wanted to be on the program. And it was a truly a special show. And that show that you mentioned about Ozzie, that was one of the programs that won an Emmy Award for us that year. And, you know, I got to tell you one more thing. So many players in pro ball were watching that show that they would come up to me when I would go visit and do a game in some of these stadiums across the country, be it major league or minor league. And they would tell me, one pitcher told me, I remember, a AAA pitcher, and I forget who it was, down in Rochester, New York, at the time, AAA team for the Baltimore Orioles. He told me how much he appreciated the show with Tom Seaver, because watching that show, Tom Seaver would talk about when you deliver the pitch, make sure your elbow is above your shoulder blade and you'll get more spin, more emphasis, more control on the pitch that you want. And the pitcher was telling me that he did not know that. No pitching coach had ever told him that. And when he started doing it, it worked for him. So, you know, let alone that kids were watching on Saturday morning, but also professional ball players were too.
That's great. Ted, you know, let's go back to the beginning. I think a lot of people under the impression that you were actually first hired as the from the San Diego Padres, which isn't true. You actually started as a radio station employee from KGB Radios, correct?
That's right. That's right. I was just a fan in the grandstand and attending all these games and basically being a mascot for a radio station. Started in 1974. And it was just a one-week promotional gimmick, basically, just for me to dress up in a chicken suit and go to the zoo and give away candy Easter eggs. And they literally, no pun intended, plucked me off the campus of San Diego State. You know, at the time, nobody wanted to do this detail that they rented a chicken suit. Nobody wanted to wear it at the station. So they dispatched a representative to the campus at San Diego State with the thought, just find the first kid that'll agree to do this for $2 an hour, and we'll be done. And by happenstance, the guy asked me if I wanted to do it for $2 an hour. And I, yeah, no problem. Happy to do it. The way I was looking at it, fellas, was just to get my foot in the door at a real radio station and then hopefully work my way up. If they asked me to empty trash cans or shine records, I would have said yes to that too. So, but wear a chicken suit? Okay, great. So I go and I give away the candy Easter eggs at the gate to all, everybody, you know, coming in. And then after my one-week stint was done, I figured with the Padres starting up and all the excitement of Ray Kroc being an owner in his first year and promising to turn the last-place Padres around, I figured, okay, maybe I can get into opening night for free with my getup. So I asked the station management. They said, sure, yeah, you can hang around if they let you in. You can continue your stay here. So I called up the Padres. They gave me a free ticket. I went down there, started cavorting around in the grandstand, got a lot of attention. I know a guy in a chicken suit showing up. This was off the wall stuff in 1974, fellas. I'm telling you. And the media had fun with it. Look at this goofus, you know, look at him. What's this? Okay. So all kinds of shenanigans in the grandstand as I started goofing around aisle to aisle. And again, I was just trying to attract attention for the radio station, but the fans were loving it. And so was the owner, Ray Kroc. He was happy about anything that would make the fans happy. And so then I just continued going and going to the games, and it just grew from there with the encouragement of the Padres, by the way.
Ben, originally you wanted to be in radio.
Yes.
That was your original goal then.
Yeah, I wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to be a sports writer. I wanted to work in media. And I figured, okay, this was my entryway. You see, guys, you know, I didn't worry whether it was $2 an hour. In fact, I would have paid them $2 an hour to be there. It wasn't about money for me. And believe me, when you take out the taxes, you know, I was working for about $1.49 an hour. You know, it sounds like the Depression era, but it was just back in the 70s. You know, but that didn't matter to me. You know, what mattered to me was opportunity. That was the deal. You know, this was my entry into a bigger marketplace. I wanted to be in media, and this was radio, and which was big back then. It was really big. And so radio it was, and I was thinking maybe I could be a news broadcaster. Maybe I could anchor the news one day. Maybe I could be a reporter for the station, even though it was a rock and roll radio station. But we had a pretty good 15-minute newscast every day that won its own awards in local radio. Still, it was a moment just to break into some kind of industry. And from there, all the doors open up for you, you know. But again, I wasn't looking at money as a college kid. I was looking at opportunity. And truth be known, that's the golden ticket.
So you started your, I guess, lack of a better word, act in the stands. You said getting into the stadium for free. But how did you actually go from being in the stands to being on the field, starting your shtick?
Yeah, good question. How it began is because after a few years of cavorting in the grandstand and making people laugh section to section, the president of the team called me up, Ballard Smith, and he said, Ted, would you like to go on the field and do some of your chicken shtick out there? and I said, yeah, is that allowed? He says, we'll make it be allowed. Don't you worry about that. You make so many people laugh in the grandstands. Why don't you go on the field and see if you can think of something? And I didn't know what to do. And so one night we had it all planned out. for me to go on the field. I still had nothing on my mind, and I went out there and improvised something with the third base umpire. The place just exploded with laughter. What I improvised was a fake Billy Martin argument with a third base umpire. And he and the umps loved it. The players were beside themselves. And needless to say, the laughter was so loud at the Jack Murphy Stadium. It showed up on the Richter scale. It was incredible. And the Padres called me back the next day and they said, "That was amazing. Yeah, you got any more bags and any more tricks in your bag?" And they encouraged me. It was the Padres that rolled out the mat and said, "Go out there." And like I say, Ray Kroc, the owner of the team, who is the founder of McDonald's, his number one goal was, of course, to win a pennant. Number two goal, or shall I say, number 1A goal, was to make sure the customers were happy, that they were pleased, that they went home with a smile on their face. And even though the Padres were a last place team, it dawned on Ray Kroc, my customers are still going home happy. And it's because of that guy in that chicken suit running around. And he loved it. And that's why the Padres opened the door for me to just use my imagination. And what I did, guys, I took my fascination for comedy, lifelong held, and I merged it with my love of sports, and I produced this unique act. And it's an interesting thing. As the season progressed, the Padres would take surveys of what the customers enjoyed about coming to a Padre game. And they found out that a preponderance of them said they came out to watch the chicken. You know, and they knew we weren't going to win, but heck, they got to watch the chicken every night. And it grew from there. And eventually, it was other teams in the major leagues and the minor leagues that started calling me up and inviting me to their hometowns to perform. And lo and behold, it became a box office attraction. And that's how everything really began.
One of your best shticks I was actually watching today was you getting actually thrown out by the umpires because you were shining their shoes and you didn't get a tip. And then you're
yes.
arguing with the umpires.
I loved it.
That's right. Those cheap bums, you know. But of course, they were in on it, you know. And at first, I improvised everything, you know. And after a few years, then the players and the umpires started coming to me with ideas. Believe it or not. And so then I would give them a rough overview of what I wanted to do or what they wanted to do with me, and we'd work it out. No rehearsal or anything. And then during the game, we'd set up an inning and go out and do it, you know? And it worked. And the audience just went crazy. You know, they really loved it. This interaction. You know, and I think, let alone that it was funny, guys, but especially for its time, but what it did was really humanize the players and the umpires, because everybody knew that we were joking around for the benefit of the audience's amusement. And that mattered. That counted. That counted to everybody. And, you know, it was silly and irreverent. And like I say, we were playing for laughs. And the audience knew they're goofing for us, you know? And everybody loved it. And this created an ambience in the stadium, a joy, and it just resonated throughout the evening. And I was particularly lucky that what I was doing gravitated to the players' mindset and enjoyment and earned their respect. And let me tell you a little side story. It earned the respect of players so much that on the night the great Lou Brock, Hall of Famer, stole a base to break Ty Cobb's career stolen base record at the time of 896 stolen bases in a career. Lou Brock did it in San Diego. And on that night in August of 1977, they stopped the game after he stole the base. The Hall of Fame was there. They brought out a microphone. They made the pronouncement that the Hall of Fame was there to collect the base, to collect Lou Brock's shoes and uniform, and even collected the granules of sand that he slid on to break the record. One of the things they did not collect was the baseball itself that he stole it on. And the Padre coach, Whitey Wiedemann at the time, got the ball as a keepsake from the Padre pitcher, Dave Friesleben, and he pocketed it. And after the game, he took it to Lou Brock, a guy who couldn't say no to anybody. So the Hall of Fame took virtually all of his belongings on that stolen base. But Whitey Wiedemann brought him the ball. He said, Lou, I saved the baseball that you stole the pitch on. Okay? And Lou Brock laughed it off. And he says, Whitey, it's not a hitting record. It's just a stolen base record. But he says, give me that baseball. And he signed it over to me. And he says, you give this ball to that crazy chicken who goofs off behind me out in left field. Okay? Wow. And the next night, Whitey Wiedemann, before the game, came to me and he says, I don't know what got into Lou's mind, but he wants you to have the baseball he stole that pitch on. So here it is. And he gave it to me, and it was amazing. And I had the baseball, and then I turned it over to the local San Diego Hall of Champions, which was a local Hall of Fame. I gave it to him decades later. And unfortunately, and I don't know what happened to it, but it disappeared. Okay. It disappeared, so it's gone. And I don't have it, and I don't know where it is. But somebody out there has a baseball that says, to the chicken, best wishes, Lou Brock. And it's dated with the date and the occurrence of breaking Ty Cobb's all-time stolen base record, which, of course, has since been broken by Ricky Henderson. Mm-hmm. Yep. But right. At the time, it was a big deal.
Ted, you know, what people, I think as they watch, I mean, as I was watching, and you were doing splits, and you were doing all this dancing, and, well, first of all, you are a very good dancer.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Believe it or not, I would do the splits, but unfortunately, I gave it up about the same age as James Brown did. and I can't do them anymore, unfortunately. But yeah, I would go out there and dance, and it would just kind of come to me. And but the audience really seemed to enjoy it. And so I tried to move in a few dance moves here and there on some particular thing. And, you know, I just reacted to whatever the audience wanted because they were my editors. And when they laughed, the bit stayed. And when they didn't laugh but still applauded, they're being polite. And I said, okay, that one didn't work, but I'll be back next inning with another one, you know. And so the San Diego audiences and audiences across the country were very, very good. I would improvise quite a bit wherever I went. And a lot of what I did was predicated on what the stadium was like as well, because it was a different stage, whatever town I went to. For example, believe it or not, San Diego Stadium, Jack Murphy Stadium, had no dugout roofs. The dugouts were literally recessed under the grandstand. So fans literally sat in the first row right over the dugout, right on top of the dugout. And back in the day, I got to tell you, the fans were very kind. So there were no incidences or anything of that nature. Everybody respected everyone. But if you look at old films of Jack Murphy Stadium, you'll see the fans literally sit on what would be the edge of the dugout. And so I couldn't perform on top of dugouts. I could only be in the grandstands or the aisles or eventually the field. But yes, dancing was great on the field, and especially in sections that were sectioned off in the bleachers where they didn't sell seats. And I had that whole platform to myself.
And you also had to stay in very good shape to do that. First of all, to keep up the stamina and to do all those moves. I would assume you probably had some kind of training regimen.
Yeah, you know what it was? I'll tell you guys what it was. Growing up in Canada, I was a goalie in hockey, and you know, just at the amateur level, and playing with 40 pounds of gear on you at the time. You build up a tolerance to the sweat, and you do get some stamina. And of course, being a goalie, there's a lot of roly-poly playing on the ground, getting up, sliding around, you know, diving, all that sort of thing. And so I was able to deal with the heat of the costume very easily, and also just move around, you know, a little more effortlessly than perhaps somebody else could just doing it for the first time. And like I say, wearing all that goalie gear up in Canada just conditioned me what to expect a few years later, just donning a chicken suit.
Speaking of hockey, apparently there was an incident in 1977 with the San Diego Mariners hockey team that you were involved in. Could you tell us that story?
It's a great moment. A great moment. Didn't know it at the time, but it was conveyed to me years later. The Russian national hockey team was visiting San Diego. And as was the case of my being a mascot for KGB radio, with the call letters emblazoned on my costume, I would do every event. Well, needless to say, I did every hockey game for the Mariners. And on this big night, the Russian national team, the Olympic champions, were coming to San Diego to play the San Diego Mariners of the World Hockey Association. And there I was before the game, cavorting in the grandstands, making fun behind the glass, putting the voodoo on them, the hex, giving them the chicken moon, you know, with raising my tail and all that sort of thing. And after the warm-up period, the team, clears the ice. Both teams clear the ice so that they could put the Zamboni out and resurface the ice. Well, the Russians would not come out to start the game. And so there was some kind of consternation going on. And I figured, okay, it was such a big crowd there. Everyone's being allowed a few extra minutes to come in before they start this big game. Even though it was an exhibition game, it was big in San Diego sports history. The Russians would not come out. So then the president of the team and ownership went down to find out what the heck is going on. And the Russians said, "We are not coming out onto that ice until you remove that idiot in a chicken suit from the premises. He is mocking our society by wearing KGB on his jersey vest." That happens to be the Russian, the Soviet CIA. Okay, the KGB. They say, "You got to get him out of here." Well, the president of the team had to explain, "Well, wait a minute. That's a radio station here in San Diego. And they've had it since the 30s. Okay, and he comes to all our games." And it was explained to them, "It'll be a bigger headline if he's not here for this game. So please understand, yes, his costume is red. Yes, his head is yellow, which is the color of your Soviet flag. We get it. But the KGB is a radio station. He must stay." And so after about a 20-minute delay, the Russians conceded, "Okay, he can stay. And we'll take the ice." And they went out and started the game on a 20-minute delay. And we avoided an international incident. And so, yes, that's how I did not know of this story until it was explained to me years later by officials who were there, that the coach was and their diplomats that traveled with them. And, of course, KGB officers that also guarded the Soviet team. They weren't going to take the ice until I was removed, but they were convinced that I was for real.
Ted, when you put this costume on and you become the chicken, it gives you a certain freedom to be crazy, to have fun, and do things that obviously you could not do as Ted Giannoulis. So what's the feeling like when you just... You're in this costume and you just have that freedom to just be nuts.
You know, I'll tell you, you've hit on something there. It's kind of like an unwritten license to humorize. And I got a sense of that really quickly. And fans grant you that license with their laughter or their smile, you know, and so it's very interesting because wearing a costume, you put yourself in a vulnerable position to begin with. And so people accept that. And so talk about being non-threatening. Okay. That's it. I mean, you've surrendered yourself in any way. And so, like I say, you're there to humorize for everyone else's benefit. And so, yeah, you can goof a little more and take a few liberties in the grandstands or on the field, you know, or dancing around. You know, if I did what I did in regular clothing, they'd probably come and lock me up, you know, and order a straitjacket. But being in costume, it just, you know, adds to the idea that this is all in good fun. And keep in mind, one of the greatest holiday observances, I won't call it a holiday, but let's just say celebration observances, is Halloween for a lot of people. Halloween. Everybody gets suited up for Halloween, and everybody accepts each other like, oh, okay, hey, you're Dracula. Very cool. All right. Excellent. Okay. Or you're Frankenstein. Oh, I see. Okay. And, oh, hey, here comes somebody else. Oh, look at this guy. He's dressed up like Mike Trout. Okay. Very cool. Okay. So whatever. A situation where everyone kind of like says, hey, I'm just going to have fun, and I'm having fun for my amusement, but your amusement as well. And so, like I say, that unwritten license comes in to humorize. And it's a great icebreaker, to say the least.
Now, I know that I'm asking you this question, knowing that there is someone who you went too far with, not on purpose, but I apparently got very angry, and that's Tommy Lasorda. So I'd love to hear the Tommy Lasorda story. But at the same time, if you could follow that up with, has anyone else ever gotten upset because they felt you went too far?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There have been a couple of instances. First of all, Tommy Lasorda happened in San Diego about 1982. Padres were making noises about challenging for first place, May of 1982. And the Dodgers were coming in for a big series. So in the middle of the game, I'm out on the field during an inning break. I take a Padre hat and a Dodger hat, and I start doing a little Mexican hat dance around both of them. And in the middle of the song, it switches from the Mexican folk ballad to a rock and roll stomp song. And I ended up stepping on the Dodger hat 26 times by mistake. And, and the fans, of course, loved it. And I have to say, even the Dodger fans got a kick out of it. Okay, they got it. All right. So anyway, at the end of the next inning, I remember Dusty Baker trotting out the left field, and I'm in the left field area, and he's yelling over to me, and he says, Teddy, I don't think Tommy liked that last bit. Okay, I said, okay. I thought he was just pulling my leg. Well, the Padres end up winning the game on a bang-bang play at home plate and in the bottom of the ninth inning, and win the game 3-2. So I'm exiting the stadium through the underground tunnel runway where the players are several minutes later. And I'm in full costume. I would dress in my van, believe it or not. I didn't have a dressing quarter at the stadium, so I dressed in my van. And I would leave in my van with my assistant. And so we're going through the corridor, and by happenstance, Tommy Lasorda comes out of the lunch area where they have the spread, the food spread for the players. And on his plate was a huge mound of lasagna, and his cheeks were full of pasta. And just by happenstance, as I'm walking, he comes out, and it, like on a 90-degree angle, suddenly, boom, in 1 second, we're face-to-face. And with the media standing around waiting to do interviews, there were about a dozen media members, he backs me up to the cinder block wall, and he starts yelling at me about stepping on a Dodger hat. He said, you want to step on a Dodger hat? Why don't you come into my bleeping office right now and step on mine? And he swore, I'm going to clean this up, fellas, but he swore a mile a minute what he was going to do to me and if I ever did it again. And as he's yelling at me and I'm in full cost, the marinara spittle with his cheeks full of lasagna was getting all over my beak. It looked like I had chicken pox, okay? But I was there as he's yelling and screaming, and the media is like, I can see, embarrassed for me right there. He's yelling at me, and all I can think in the back of my mind is, oh, dear God, do not let this man swallow that food down his esophagus. Please, I don't care what he does to me. Don't let this happen to him. I was literally praying for that man's safety. So no food would lodge in his esophagus while he's screaming at me. He finally, he lets me go, doesn't say anything for it, doesn't hit me, okay, but just has his, and it took, it was about a minute long, and he stomps away, complete with the lasagna still on his plate. And then I just walk away quietly. The media doesn't say anything. I guess they've seen Tommy like this before. But that was the end of that. So he blew a gasket. But, you know, I've always theorized that had something bad happened at that moment to Tommy with that food in his mouth, you know, I could see the headlines, chicken chokes Lasorda, you know, and I would have, you know, Dodger fans would have been mad at me, but I think the rest of the state would have voted me governor of California. But it was a moment that was quite unusual and, you know, forever, you know, lives with those stories about Tommy. The other story I remember was in 1979 when the Yankees were visiting the Seattle Mariners at the Old Kingdom. And Ron Guidry came to me before the game as starting pitcher for the Yankees. He says, my wife's a big fan. Can you come out and do anything with me on the mound? She'll get a big kick. We're televising back to New York. I know she'll love it. And I said, okay, Ron, let's do this. And so I planned a little 10-second sketch with Ron on the mound and we plan it for the third inning, bottom of the third inning, as he's going to take the mound. Well, Lou Piniella, volatile left fielder of the New York Yankees, had just struck out with the men in scoring position, a second and third, to kill a Yankee rally. And he's kind of mad. So as he's walking off towards third, towards left field in a huff, he sees me goofing with his pitcher, Ron Guidry, and he starts yelling at me. Okay? And I didn't know he's yelling at me. I turn around, and then I see his glove coming right at me, just missing my beak. He threw it at me. Then he starts chasing me around the diamond to get away from his pitcher. And I'm running for my life thinking, oh, my God, this guy's going to beat me to a pulp. What's wrong? The fans are going nuts. They all think this is all part of the sketch. A sellout crowd's going, oh, man, this is fun. Okay, suddenly they see Lou break away from the chase, and he goes and he starts yelling at the third base umpire to get me off the field. Okay, and the umpire just calms him down. Now the fans think, oh, this was for real. This wasn't some sketch. This was for real. And the fans are booing Lou now as he's going out the left field. And so I go to the third base umpire, and he tells me, don't worry. He says to me, you just keep doing what you're doing, Ted. He says, the only difference between Piniella and Jimmy Pearsall, a guy from back in the day who was also crazy, the only difference between Piniella and Pearsall, except Pearsall has papers. So you keep doing what you're doing. Okay. And that was it, but it was quite a show. And just to make to put a capper on this, Lou was very gracious in later years, and he came on and did the Baseball Bunch with us as a guest. And he said, I hope you understand, it was just the heat of the moment. And I told him, Lou, I totally understand. Don't worry about it. You know, it got a great laugh. So don't worry about it. You know, and from that point forward, Lou couldn't have been more gracious, more kind, and more friendly with me, even in his days when he managed Seattle, went on later on to manage Seattle, and of course the Reds and all the other teams. You know, I think didn't he have a stint with the Cubs as well?
Cubs, yes, and Rays, yes.
Yeah. And he was very, very kind. But, you know, it was the heat of the moment, and that was Lou being Lou at the time.
Yep. So there was a conflict between you and the radio station in May of 79 that caused you to leave the station. But you had you sued the station to use the chicken costume, and a Judge Rosato let you, you won your case, but you had to use a different chicken suit, I guess.
No, actually, it was the other way around. When I was fired by the radio station because they had the opportunity. The chicken got to be so popular that the manufacturer of the costume was getting a lot of requests to have the chicken suit made for other radio stations across the country. And out of good faith, He told them, no, I'm not going to do that, okay? Well, the volume of requests was coming in so hot and heavy, and he was turning away all this business, that he said, that doesn't. I'm going to have the radio station, KGB, buy the copyrights, or I'm not going to turn away this business anymore. I'm in the business to make costumes, and I'm declining, and they're not buying other costumes. They just want that chicken suit. And so the manufacturer offered the radio station the opportunity to buy the copyrights of the costume. They refused. They wanted $3,500. The station said no. $3,500 back in the 70s was a fairly good chunk of change.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, and Cadillacs were going for $6,000 at the time, you know. And so anyway, the station said no repeatedly. And when the manufacturer told me about it, I said, well, if the station isn't going to buy it, then I will. Okay. And I gave them the money, and I just put the copyright in my pocket. I said, great. I just want it off the market. I don't want to see chickens across the country like department store Santa Clauses. And so I said, I just want it off the market because I see bigger things ahead, staying in San Diego as I've envisioned it. And the station got upset that I bought it, because their claim was we owned the copyright from the beginning and they were just trying to hold us up for more money. And the manufacturer said, no, that's from our catalog. And we just made a few redesignments to it to make it the KGB chicken, as it was known at the time. So the station fired me. They filed a lawsuit to prevent me from branching out on my own in this costume. Took me to court, but the courts ruled in my favor while I was defending myself. And they said, no, I own the actual copyrights, and I was free to go out on my own. And that's how I started branching out. And then all the teams started calling me from all across the country and around the world, even Latin baseball and basketball teams from Europe and Asia and all around the world started calling me to invite me to their hometowns to perform. So, that's how I broke out on my own. I was just defending myself. And again, like in the case of Lou Piniella, believe it or not, years later, got to be friends with the old radio station again, although it's under different management now. But everyone has an understanding that the costume was mine all along, and I was right to get it. But like I say, the radio station could have bought it. They had first crack. They had many cracks. They declined. And anybody could have bought it. Any team could have bought it. The New York Yankees could have bought it and had the New York chicken if they wanted, you know. But it was out in the market, and I said, I'm not going to put this out. I'm going to get it. And so I seized on it and put it away. And like I say, the station was upset, and that's when we broke off relations and they fired me.
And that led to the great hatching.
Yes, the grand hatching, because what I had done at the time, I was in limbo. I was under court order until this case was settled one way or another. I couldn't wear my original suit, but demand to bring the chicken back was so great. I said, okay, I'll make my own chicken suit for the time being and come back. And it's the suit that I'm wearing to this very day. So I decided to make this gargantuan styrofoam egg and have a grand hatching at Jack Murphy Stadium to reintroduce myself. It was like the second coming of the chicken. And it sold out the place, completely sold it out. For a last place team, like the Padres, playing against another last place team, the Houston Astros. And at the time, it was a magic moment. Front page news here in San Diego. In fact, at the time, Walter Cronkite, a reporter, to cover for the broadcast. It's amazing. And so it was a fairly big news. And I hatched out of this gigantic styrofoam egg to a 10-minute standing ovation and was carried off the field by the Padres. And it was a magic moment for me.
That's great.
Ted, there are other mascots and that other teams have mascots. I mean, Jeff and I are Met fans, and there's Mr. Met and stuff. But the San Diego Chicken is probably, and I'm not just saying this, it's got to be, if not the most known, it's in the top two. So you've got this great, almost like a franchise. I mean, you've got this great product. You're in demand. So the question that I have is, how do you make this so that you can, I know you're not, you didn't do it for the money, but at some point you want to make as much money and be successful. And
oh yes. Yes.
So how do you need to have an agent. You've got all these bookings. I mean, being the San Diego chicken, can you retire wealthy?
Oh, I could. Yes, I can retire comfortably. Oh, absolutely, mm-hmm. fellas. I started off at $2 an hour. I started off really for opportunity, and $2 an hour was great. But then, as I continued, you know, I saw for myself, this is box office. But for whatever reason, people are coming out. People are coming. Guys, people were coming out to the games that weren't baseball fans. And they were getting their first exposure of baseball just to see this goofy chicken perform. And the general managers loved it. And they were attracting like a magnet, people who had never been to the ballpark before. How do they know this? Simple. They were getting phone calls from people asking, what are the directions to the ballpark? So they knew these people had never been out before. And it was getting to be a gate attraction, let alone baseball fans were coming out, but non-baseball fans were coming out too. And I started selling out stadiums. And as this began in the major leagues and then the minor leagues, which I didn't know existed so much, but the minor leagues, it went crazy. And because they hadn't had a so-called big league attraction at their parks. And here it was. And it was great. And so it created its own demand. And I started booking up. General managers were telling me, oh, Ted, you got to start charging. Because when I started out, I was going around for nothing. I just told the guys, just buy me a pizza afterwards. We'll be fine. And I noticed for myself, oh, these crowds are huge. And they're telling me. And they came to me in good faith and said, Ted, you got to start charging something. And I started charging. Everybody was on board with it. And nobody pulled out. And I would just get more and more business. Again, I was leading with good faith. And good faith takes you to magical places. And suddenly I discovered on my own, oh, it's okay. This is great. And I started putting together a little team of assistants to help me out and behind the scenes. And I started booking. And believe it or not, you brought up agents. I tried to get agents to represent me. None of them would. Not a single one. And that back in the day, I would approach big agents of the day. They said, no, because I can't blame them. They were looking at me, said, I'm not going to represent a guy in a chicken suit. I'm trying to represent Mark McGuire and Jose Canseco. I'm not going to represent, oh, I got the chicken on my roster. No. So I accepted it. And nobody would represent me. So I said, I'll represent myself. So be it. And I did the bookings. I had a little office. And people would call, and I had a secretary to help me direct things, and it just grew from there. I just continue building the business. In fact, guys, you might not know this, but I was on the road 250 days out of the year throughout the 80s and the 90s, just visiting one-night stands of different teams. So it got to be fairly good for me, but it got to be great for the teams that had me, because they looked up whether it was hockey, basketball, baseball, and to a lesser extent, football. But they would look up and see empty seats filled up with the presence of the chicken. And they said, how can you say no? This is found money. And so the team started reaching out to me as opposed to my reaching out to teams. And it just grew from there.
And you were on talk shows. There's a picture on the internet of you with Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yeah. All by invitation. Yeah, all these things. Yeah, people were opening up the doors. You make people laugh. I'm telling you, it creates its own path. But, yeah, when the president of the United States says, hey, I'm coming to town, do you mind helping introduce me to the rally, I say, yes, no problem, Mr. President. Happy to do that, you know. And or then an owner like Ray Kroc calls you up to a suite box just to say thank you and say, is there anything we can do for you? Let us know. You know, this is, I'm getting time with ownership and with people valued in society. And what was I doing? And just making people laugh in good faith and people respecting it and appreciating it. And it just grows from there. Again, you lead with your good faith and magical things happen.
You know, not just presidents, but celebrities, including Jimmy Buffett, Paul McCartney, even the King Elvis Presley, you had him actually stop a concert.
Yes.
one of the biggest compliments a performer can have is being on a cereal box. And you were on the box of, I think, Corn Flakes.
Yes.
How was that?
Kellogg's Corn Flakes. Yes. Yes, I think it was back in 1984. Kellogg's came out with a limited cereal box of certain celebrities. Fernando Valenzuela was one at the time. You know, the hot all-star pitcher of the Dodgers. There was Sally Ride, the astronaut, and they asked me to be on a panel and sign the box, and I was beside myself. Great. So I was on a Kellogg's Corn Flakes box. I remember FTD, the florist, calling me up and said, we want to use you in a commercial with Merlin Olsen, the All-Pro Hall of Fame football player with the LA Rams. Who turned broadcaster.
And was on and Little House on the Prairie.
Yes. That's how my wife refers to Merlin Olsen. You mean the star from Little House on the Prairie?
That's right.
Yes, that Merlin Olsen. Yes, and so all these opportunities were coming my way, and it was quite enjoyable. Needless to say. I was like a kid in a candy store, you know, waking up every morning and seeing a new opportunity being presented. So, you know, it was fun. So something as irreverent as a guy in a chicken suit, you know, can create opportunities in the United States.
A true success story. Ted, you've been very generous with your time. I have one more question before we let you go. And I know you've been all over the world. You've been in 8 countries, 4 continents, all 50 states. You performed in front of 60 million people. But was there a place that you wanted to perform, but you were not able to?
Yes, there was a couple. You know, I've been to Shea Stadium, by the way, fellas. Great audience. Oh, I love that audience. A quick side story. I have a layover in LaGuardia. This was about 1982, 83. I've got a layover in LaGuardia. And the Mets are playing that afternoon against the Phillies. And I said, oh, you know, it's just a short cab ride to go over to Shea Stadium. Why don't we do a cameo? I call up the Mets and say, hey, will you have me in if I just come out and make a one-inning cameo surprise for the fans? I'd love to do it. And they say, are you nuts? This is great. We'd love to have you. Sure. Okay. So I go over there. And again, I'm on about a 4-hour layover at LaGuardia. So perfect. I just take a cab over, suit up, make an impromptu appearance at Shea Stadium, coming from the left field area in the grandstands and going through that walkway. And the fans go nuts. They go nuts. So with the game in progress, there's this mini standing ovation as I'm going from section to section, just walking by waving. And then I get on top of the dugout. All the heads are turned. The damn chicken is here among us. We didn't even know. People are going nuts. And so I get up on the dugout. I do a one-inning cameo appearance. By the way, there's a full-page shot in the 25th anniversary of the New York Mets yearbook, anniversary book or history of the New York Mets. Full-page shot. Of a moment when I'm on top of the dugout with a beer. And you can see the fans in the background, and it's great. And they couldn't have been more kinder and more generous with their laughter. And I just, you know, did my one inning stint, waved goodbye and left. Fans were coming up to me and they were so warm and gracious and can I use the word loving? They were fantastic. And again, you know, they had seen, they knew of me, you know, through a variety of sources, but the baseball bunch, you know, especially. And they were great. They were great. And so, but to get to your other question of what stadium could I play? I wanted to play Yankee Stadium, the original. I reached out to them. They wouldn't respond and wouldn't have any part of me. Probably because I did the Mets first, but probably to a larger extent because they're a button-down culture, and I accepted it. You know, and that's fine. And you know, I think it would have been nice because the Yankees would, I was told, would play a lot of my videos up on their scoreboard. So I said, hey, why don't you have me out? Even for a little bit, just a few innings. I'll come out and do a few innings, and the fans will have fun. No, not of the sort. But the other place I wanted to play, guys, was I would have loved to have played the old Montreal Forum for the Montreal Canadiens. Mm-hmm. The Forum back then in Canada was what the original Yankee Stadium or Wrigley Field is to baseball fans, you know, and so, you know, it never came to fruition. You know, again, the culture was pretty buttoned down and back then in the day. And so I never got that opportunity. I think it would have been great, great fun. I've been all throughout Canada but never to the old Montreal Forum. So those would be the only two places, those really cherished cathedrals of sports.
Well, Ted, it's been a pleasure having you on. It's such great stories, such great memories. I certainly remember you performing in stadiums and watching you on TV and the interaction with the fans and the umpires and the players. It's just fantastic. And it couldn't have been nicer for your time. Thank you very much. We really appreciate you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the interest. Thank you and good luck. Heck, we didn't even get around to barbecue.
Well, Ted, you know what? I was going to ask you, does a chicken have any trepidation about coming on a barbecue show? You know, you were very brave to do that.
Okay, I'm going to let you guys in on a secret. I don't mind if people eat those other chickens. It helps eliminate the competition. If you can't beat them, eat them. Think of the marketing opportunities if I'm the last chicken standing. Oh,
and with that, Ted, you are fantastic. Thank you for giving us such joy for all these years. You just such a delight. You make the experience of going to a game even that much better, and we can't thank you enough.
Well, thank you, fellas. I appreciate your interest and the consideration. And, of course, the kind thoughts. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
And thank you, Ted. How do you pronounce his last name?
Giannalis.
He was fantastic. The San Diego Chicken, the most famous mascot there ever was, and very entertaining. Check out his YouTube videos. It is just fantastic. You want to get a laugh? This will make you laugh.
Every time I watch those videos, I just crack up. I really do.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's so immature.
The antics that he comes up with. It was just
that's great.
Amazing. Yeah.
He was great. Yeah, he was definitely somebody, Jeff, that I'd like to have back. I'm saying that right now. If he's listening, he has an open invitation because he was a lot of fun.
Yes.
And when you think about it, the people that show, Baseball Bunch, it was all Hall of Famers on that show. And yeah, they weren't Hall of Famers at the time, but they're all Hall of Famers.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
So speaking, Jeff, of gifts, speaking of gift giving season, since we're big on barbecue, we're going to talk about barbecue gifts. And Len, one of the last episodes, you wanted a bag of charcoal. And who went out there and got you a barbecue gift?
You did. You got me a bag of B&B charcoal.
Because Vic Clevenger said
did not.
He did not. But he said that was a very good charcoal, and you wanted to use it. So I went out there. I searched all over to find a bag of B&B charcoal. And I tell you, I just went to the first Ace hardware store I found, and there it was. But
who's better than you? There's nobody.
That's right. That's right.
But Jeff, so basically you gave me coal. I got a lump of coal.
You can put that in your stock and stuff. There you go.
So Jeff, I know you mentioned a couple of things that you said would be good barbecue gifts. And I have a list a mile long that we could run through. But what are some of the things that you have that would be good barbecue gifts?
Well, you can just Google barbecue gifts and you'll see a lot of stuff. I mean, you have your usual spices, your tools, but there are some unusual things that people don't think of giving that are really important for the barbecue person in your life. Fire-resistant gloves. That could be very handy. You know, you drop something into the fire, you want to get it out, you don't want to burn your hands. The gloves, that's a great gift. Thermometers are a great gift. So those type of things are some things I recommend. And I have one here that is just fantastic, but I'm going to let you go with some of your stuff.
So let's just talk for a second about the grilling gloves. The longer they are down your arm, that could come in handy, because sometimes you're right. You drop something and you need to go lower than, just a regular glove length. That's very helpful. I've got on here, you're right, you can Google it, but pans and cookware, including cast iron. Cast iron is great on your grill. Grilling baskets for all the small items, if you want to grill shrimp or little vegetables, or even if you're careful with the vegetables so they don't go through the grates, it's how time consuming is it to have to put each individual one? If you have a grilling basket, it's so much easier.
Oh, absolutely.
Pellets, pellet grill, you can't have enough pellets. You go through those a lot. But wood chunks, right?
Sure. I mean, I'm going on a couple sites here. BBQguys.com. I see this is unusual, something I wouldn't think of giving, but something I do all the time. I mean, when I clean out my pellet grill, I take a little vacuum. But there's a vacuum especially for pellets and charcoal. And it's out there on the BBQguys.com website. It's vacuum specifically made for a barbecue.
Yeah, and you need that because you're right. You have to, when you use a pellet grill especially, you get I'm going to call it sawdust or whatever it is. But you need that. It gets in there. And that's the only way you're going to get it out is with the vacuum. Jeff, we, of course, have had the guys from baseballbbq.com.
Another great place to get stuff. Yep.
Right. Grilling tools and accessories. That's a great gift.
Absolutely.
A really great gift.
Yes.
And they have clothing on there. Of course, cutting boards make a great gift. Now, we, of course, recommend Fifth and Cherry. But if those cutting boards, if they're out of your price range, there are other cutting boards you can get. But a cutting board is just a fantastic thing.
Yeah, you can go to BBQguru.com. They have some stuff on there, their website
absolutely.
As well.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And what about, it's funny. I was going to say the Pandemic Baseball Book Club, but that would not be barbecue gifts.
Right.
Knives make a great gift. A good knife, is really important.
Yeah. And if the barbecue lover in your life likes to cook more than one piece of meat or chicken or poultry or whatever, get them a variety of probes for mm-hmm. the thermometer.
Absolutely. Oh, you got to go. You have to go to ThermoWorks for the ThermoPen, the ThermoPop. They have a smart meat thermometer. Oh, no, they don't. But the meter, which is a smart meat thermometer, those are great gifts. Aprons are great gifts. You know what, Jeff? What about, and this could be either a stocking stuffer, you can make someone a basket, getting someone rubs and sauces from different parts of the country.
Yeah.
From all over. You can go on Etsy, you can go to on online and get sauces and rubs that you've never heard of, but they are so much fun. How much fun is it to just get a rub. You have no idea how it's going to be. Get some chicken thighs or whatever and just experiment with it.
Absolutely. Right? What about, now if you have a kettle grill, you can get a kettle pizza deluxe pizza oven kit for your kettle grill.
Yeah. They have actually those pizza oven. There are pizza oven inserts for pellet grills. They have pizza ovens that you can use gas with. Yeah. What about grill brushes? You know,
brushes,
right? That's absolutely a good gift.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be. I mean, there's for every price range. You know, a pellet grill is a beautiful gift, but it's certainly not. You're not going to get that for your Secret Santa. I don't think, unless you work on Wall Street and for a hedge fund.
Right.
You know, that might be. Maybe they're getting Secret Santa gifts that are that in that price range. But for most people, they're not.
How about what they call what they call the claws that when you
Of course the bear claws,
the bear claws.
Or grill claws, I should say, grill claws. Yeah, for shredding pork or chicken.
Right,
exactly. That have you ever used those, Jeff?
Personally, no.
It is fun. Yeah. You get this. Think about it, you get this big chunk of meat that you take off. You take off the grill. Now, I'm talking about like a a pork butt. You take it off. And you've got these two claws and you just rip it apart. It's a lot of fun.
Of course, you can get steak meat sent to you. There's steak steak warehouses. They hold Omaha steaks and things like that.
Right.
What do we have on with Vic? He said alligator. You can actually get alligator sent to you if you want.
Yeah, you could. You know what? What about cookbooks? What grilling person, what anybody involved with cooking doesn't love a good cookbook?
A little secret here. I went to Len's house the other day and I knew he had a few cookbooks. I didn't know how many he had. He had a lot of cookbooks.
Yeah. And you know what? I love them.
Yeah. But why do you keep making me the same thing over and over again?
I have all these cookbooks. And you're right. I always go to the same thing, which is wrong. I mean, we had on Stephen Reichlin. He has his vegetable cookbook that he put out this year, right? Meathead, of course, has his fantastic cookbook.
Jamie Pavines has his cookbooks.
Yeah, I mean, there and
Adrian Miller,
right? So there are tons of grilling cookbooks.
But this is the one gift I want to tell everybody, because I would never have thought of this. And this looks like so cool. And it's not that expensive. So when you're making a steak or a piece of meat, a large piece of meat, you want to put your own stamp on it. Right? And this is your hard labor. You put your blood, sweat, and tears in it. You want it to come out perfect. So you want to put your stamp on it.
You mean like a forever stamp so you can mail it? What do you mean?
No, Jeff? Like a personalized miniature steak branding iron. You can actually buy a branding iron with your initials on it for like $35 off of Amazon, and you could just sear your initials into the steak while it's cooking. I thought that was a great kind of gift for the barbecue person.
That is great. That is great. Yeah. So everybody could have a steak with JC on it, right?
You can put up the three letters. So, I mean, you can put if you have a nickname like Ace, you can put Ace on it.
I like it. I like it a lot. That's a good one. Oh, what about, what about butcher paper?
Yes.
How many times during the year do you say, can I borrow some butcher paper? You end up using foil, but that's a good gift. There are so many things.
I just go to your house and borrow butcher paper.
Right. That is true. Aprons. Another good thing, right?
Rib rings.
Rib racks.
Rib racks, rib rings. I picked something up for myself the other day. It was a rack for wings and chicken legs. It's right on top. So
now I can't buy that for you because you already got it.
Right. Well, you can return the one you got for me.
Hey, you know what I saw? A paella pan.
Ooh.
Because you can do everything outside on your grill whether it's a smoker, your grill. I mean, everything during the, I mean, we're outside during the colder weather, but when it's nice out, there's no reason you have to heat up your kitchen.
Yeah. I would use my grill. Truth be told, I have some construction done in the kitchen. I've been using my grill in this cold weather we have up here in the Northeast.
And it's nice, right? It's good to have, right? It's your outdoor kitchen. And especially since you don't have a kitchen right now.
Exactly.
It's your only kitchen. So otherwise, all you're doing is takeout constantly. Yes.
That's not good for you.
Yeah. There's subscriptions to these. I mentioned the sauces. There are clubs.
Yeah.
You go online.
Like the Wine of the Month Club and things like that.
Yeah.
You have a Sauce of the Month Club or a Rub of the Month Club.
Mm-hmm. My daughter had last year. My daughter got me a few months of the subscription.
Oh yeah, well, you know what she got me? Nothing. But that's okay. I love her anyway.
Good. What about coolers? Right.
Uh huh.
It could be a cooler to just keep the, you know, when you bring the meat outside or bring whatever you're bringing outside and you need to keep cool for a while. It could be a bigger cooler when you take that brisket off and you want to wrap it and then stick it in the cooler to have it rest. Could be that. There's so many things. Griddles.
Yep.
I think we said tongs and spatula. That, of course, you can go to baseballbbq.com for that. So, and of course, you know, our good friend Ray Sheehan has his barbecue Buddha sauces. And what about Elda's Kitchen, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can go to her website. She's been on the show a couple of times. Go to her website, get some of her sauces.
Absolutely.
I think, Jeff, therefore I am.
Yes.
I think we've given people enough.
And if you want to send us some stuff, our address is... But our phone number is 516-855-8214. Drop us a line. Our email is baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Our Facebook is baseballandbbq. Our Twitter, @baseballandbbq. Instagram, baseballandbarbecue, with barbecues all spelled out. Our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Please rate and review us.
Oh, you know what? I just thought of something. I wanted to congratulate you on your appearance on the Barbecue Central show with our friend Greg Rempe, who had you on to talk about the lockout. And Jeff, you are Mr. Baseball, because you gave a very good explanation of the lockout. If anybody wants to hear that, it was just, find the Barbecue Central show. And you were very good on that. So thought I would mention that.
Oh, thank you very much. And I just want to mention, I had the pleasure of going to a book signing last week where they had our friends Brett Topel and Eric Sherman. Both of them are knee deep in writing a new book for next year. So I can't wait about that. It's going to be for Eric. It's going to be writing something on Fernando Valenzuela. So that should be interesting. Yes.
We had on, why did we talk about Fernando Valenzuela?
Yeah, it was Jason Turbo.
Oh, yeah. Right. They bled blue.
They bled blue.
Yeah. For those who were not around, you know, for our younger audience who did not experience Fernando Mania, mm-hmm. that was something.
Yep.
That really was. I mean, it didn't last long.
Right. It's a few years.
Right. But
it was something special when it did happen.
Yeah, very special. That he was incredible. That was amazing. And speaking of gifts, okay, we had, of course, Randall Thompson of Dugout Mugs, which of course is for if you're just a baseball fan and not a barbecue fan. Or you know what? What's better than going outside, putting the grill on, having your drink, and just hanging out? and doing it with a dugout mug, that's pretty special.
It is. And with that, here is Randall Thompson of Dugout Mugs. Randall Thompson is the president and founder of Dugout Mugs. Dugout Mugs are baseball bat drinking mugs, a very unique item that makes a great gift for someone or to yourself, as I have done. They're very popular gifts for Little League coach, Father's or Mother's Day, wedding parties, and of course, the holiday season. These mugs have the MLB license and can also be customized. Randall is here to talk about his company. Welcome to Baseball and BBQ, Randall Thompson.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome, Randall.
Happy to be here.
So, Randall, how did you come up with this idea to start a company for dugout mugs?
I was coaching college baseball in 2014. The hitting coach was creating his own training tool and taking a handsaw and cutting wooden baseball bats in half in the dugout. And as he was doing that, there was a bunch of loose bat barrels just lying around in the dugout, and picked one up, took a look at one, and thought I could drill that out and turn it into a pretty cool drinking mug. And that's how the dugout mug was born.
There were no paper cups available, so you did what you had to do
out of necessity. Yeah.
And you know, Randall, doing some research, this company of yours is, you've got a lot of people working for you.
Yeah, I would say all in all, on a daily basis to make everything go around, probably about 70 people make it go around.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People don't realize, you know, what goes into this. And as I was doing my, I call it stalking, but I noticed that you have somebody working for the company, Blaise Maris, mm-hmm. who's Roger Maris's grandson.
Right. Yeah. He went to the same college as I went to, and we were looking for some help, and I reached out to my old college coach and I said, "Hey, do you have anybody that would be interested in working for us?" And Blaise came highly recommended. Yeah. He brings a certain work ethic and a certain professionalism, and just in general, just a stand up guy. Awesome to work with on a daily basis. And obviously it's in his blood to do things with excellence. So
yeah, I was going to say, forget all that. His grandfather hit 61 home runs in a season. So, you know, the guy could do whatever he wants. I mean, come on.
Yeah. He could be a real hole and it wouldn't matter. Right.
Exactly.
So where's your company located?
We're in Winter Haven, Florida, which is pretty much Lakeland, and Lakeland is pretty much right in the middle of Tampa and Orlando and Florida.
Is that where your production facilities are and everything?
Yeah, that's where we do production. And then there's a bunch of people that are remote in different states, one in Illinois, one in South Carolina, one in Alabama, the kind of people just all over the place. But where we do a majority of our production is done in Winter Haven, Florida.
So Randall, tell us about you. Okay. Besides the fact that you saw a sawed-off bat and thought, hey, I'll make a drinking mug out of it. Tell us about your background.
I grew up around baseball my entire life. The time I was 4 years old up until I was about 22 or 23 years old. Played high school ball and college ball. Signed with the Blue Jays out of college after my senior year. And only played for about a season and a half before the Blue Jays released me. And yeah, my life has been baseball. And now the past 6 or 7 years since I've launched Dugout Mugs, it's been baseball, but just in kind of a different capacity. And yeah, love baseball, love the game of baseball, love the people that are involved in the game of baseball. So I would say all in all, I'm a baseball guy. Always have been. So I've always loved it unexplainably, just loved it.
I was looking up your record on Baseball Reference, and your ERA was 2.87. I mean, they kind of let you go a little too soon.
Yeah, they screwed me. But, you know, it's a blessing. I've played with guys that have stuck around in the minor leagues for a pretty long time, and they get up to Double A or Triple A, and they can kind of taste the big leagues. And I feel like I'm kind of blessed that I never really felt like I actually had a chance. The guys that felt like they had a chance have a really hard time of letting go of the game. I had a really hard time letting go of the game, and I didn't get anywhere close to the big leagues. Yeah, it's kind of a blessing in disguise. I did have a good season, me getting released was a little premature when I look back on it, but I'm sure glad that it did happen when it did.
It's a good thing you weren't a football fan, because I don't know if you ever tried to make a mug out of a football. It just, every time you cut into it, it just deflates and
deflates. Yeah,
you're screwed.
That's a good point. Yeah, thank God I wasn't a football guy.
So you've been around the game your whole life, and you said you got this idea watching the loose bats, and it's just a great product. I mean, you know, it can be customized. You have the MLB license, and you can get any team. Looking on your website, you have all these great pictures of players using the mug. You know, even got Mariano Rivera on there, which I know is one of Len's favorite guys. So,
I do. I'll interrupt a second, because I got the chance to have a catch with Mariano just a few weeks ago.
That's awesome.
And it was pretty awesome. So, yeah.
How did that come about?
We actually, in my other working life, one of our carriers, Hartford Insurance, they're a big sponsor of the Yankees. So they had a special day. It was with Tino Martinez and Mariano. We had there was a question and answer session. Then we got to hit in the cage with Tino giving us some advice. And then we went into the visitor's dugout, and we had Mariano, and he crouched down, he was catching, and they were calling me the barbecue guy, because I wasn't shy. I went right over to them and I was like, you guys, you ever come on podcasts? And I told them about it. And then the next thing you know, barbecue guy. So it was having a catch with Mariano. I think if I had been there a couple more hours, I might have converted to the, well, you're wearing a Red Sox shirt, so.
I'm a baseball fan. It doesn't matter to me. Any team goes for me.
Good.
Tino Martinez is one of the most down-to-earth nice guys in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Jeff, you have that dugout mug that you've been showing. Of course, this is a podcast, so it's all audio. Who's on there? What, you have a team on there?
I don't have a team. It's Mike Piazza. Mike Piazza model. So, yeah, that's fun. But so Randall, you have all teams. And then you get personalized, and you also have each. You don't have all the players. I mean, I guess anybody who signs with you, correct? How does that work out?
We have a license with Major League Baseball Players Association, which means that we have the rights to all the active players' signatures and likeness and numbers. We also have a license with the National Baseball Hall of Fame, which that's the one that Piazza is part of, mm-hmm. and they have an umbrella of players that. Just because you're in the Hall of Fame doesn't necessarily mean we can work with those particular players. There's a certain select amount of players that are actually involved with the National Baseball Hall of Fame license. And so that's how we're able to use Mike Piazza's name and his signatures because of that license with the Hall of Fame.
Randall, you've got in your bio, the last sentence of your bio, it says Randall likes to play tetherball and read about patent and trademark law. Now, I would imagine it's something like this. You get a lot of companies or people that try and knock you off. Have you had to take anyone to court to protect this?
Nothing's ever gotten to court. Any time that a cease and desist goes out or you file a lawsuit or whatever it is, to actually get it to court is hundreds of thousands of dollars to actually get it to that point. It always ends up in just a settlement agreement of just saying, oh, yep, our bad. But yeah, we do see pretty often people trying to knock it off. And, you know, I think that a struggle comes passion. And very early on when I first launched Dugout Mugs, there was some struggles that came along with stuff that involved IP law. And because of that struggle, it kind of grew into a passion. And I got really, really intrigued and started reading about patent and trademark law and wanting to learn about it as much as I possibly could.
Got the holidays coming up. So what's on tap for the holidays?
So we just launched a metal dugout mug, which is the barrel of a baseball bat metal version. It's made out of stainless steel, but it replicates the barrel of a metal baseball bat. We've brought a bunch of those in, hoping to sell a bunch of those. And we're going to reintroduce the shortstop, which is a smaller version of the dugout mug. Holds 9 ounces. It's, I guess, more so for coffee and whiskey type drinks. So the combination of those two things, and then also just trying to get as wide as possible with the dugout mug, is ultimately the plan of how we're going to hopefully be ready for the fourth quarter.
It's not just mugs. You also have shot glasses, bottle openers. I made a mug. Also, a half a baseball. I saw that you turns into a bottle opener. That's great. Wine glasses. It's terrific. And I love looking on your website at all teams. And it's just not their logo. You have their skyline. You have the players. You have different models. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It all started with the dugout mug, which is the barrel of a baseball bat turned into a drinking mug. And then we've kind of put our toe in the water with other products, like converting the knob of a baseball bat into a shot glass. And that's another original patented product that we have. The bottle opener, not unique to us. It's been good. People have made those bottle openers for quite a long time. What makes us unique, I guess, in the category is that we're able to lean our MLB license into it. So if you wanted a Yankees bat handle bottle opener, we're the only company that can do that. So that makes it cool and unique. And then the wind up, that's a unique product to us. And that's something that we shortly came out with after the dugout mug. So yeah, we're definitely trying to get as deep and narrow as possible. And then slowly but surely, we kind of widen up with these other product offerings. And it seems to be a pretty solid business model for us thus far.
What's the patent that you have? What's trademarked in this?
So the design of the dugout mug is patented. The design of the knob shot is patented. We have a patent on the word mark wind up. Same thing with dugout mugs. We have a home plate tray. We took a home plate, converted it into like a carrying tray that can carry 4 drinks. We have a patent on that, but we don't even sell it. We sold it really early on. And it's kind of a little bit of a shipping nightmare. So we kind of just threw it in our back pocket, and maybe we'll come back to that at some point. But yeah, I think that kind of covers the IP that we have.
And it's not just baseball teams. You can customize your mug. I see on your website you have a photo mug that you can put on. You can put their logo on, a message. So that's terrific. And you know, people can just go in and order it. The website is dugoutmugs.com. And I encourage everybody to just look around in there. It's really a fun website to look at.
Yeah, if you're a baseball fan and you land on our site, I'd be willing to bet you're going to find something that's going to intrigue you, not only for yourself, but also as a gift, as you alluded to in the beginning of this. And those photo mugs are a big hit around Father's Day. Moms upload photos of dads with their sons or their daughters. The amount of just the realistic nature of the photo that ends up being engraved on the mug, it's pretty incredible. As a person that's not easily impressed, whenever I look at what our laser techs are able to do with those, I'm pretty dang impressed with what they're able to do.
Yeah, Randall, you've obviously grown the company in the short amount of time you've been in business. So what's the biggest type of advertising? What are you doing? How are you growing the company?
Mostly social media ads. So we started out on Facebook in 2016, Facebook and Instagram. Since then, we've moved into Google ads and Pinterest ads. We're going to mess around with some other channels this fourth quarter to see, like TikTok's becoming really popular, or it is very popular. We're going to test that out, see how that goes. And then also YouTube ads, but mostly just taking a relevant product, coming up with a relevant promotion, putting a relevant product in front of relevant people has really been the secret sauce. And just being unique, really. It's pretty simple to have a unique selling proposition when you are the unique selling proposition. You know, it's just like, we're not competing against anybody, really. If you're a baseball fan and a bat barrel mug's put in front of you, and you can get your favorite team engraved on the front of it, or printed on the front of a metal mug, it just seems like the biggest no-brainer that you would scoop it up as a gift. So yeah, just social media, just put it in front of relevant eyes and the rest takes care of itself.
I'm sure with all the cracked bats that happen during a game, there's plenty of inventory to get from teams or whatever. But I wanted to ask you, you know, I see that it comes with care for your dugout mug. You can't put it in a microwave. So tell us the best way to care for it.
Yeah. So, the way I, about 60% of people actually don't even use it. They just put it on a display shelf, and it's kind of a conversation piece more so than it is actually used for its utility. But people do bring it out for like the big game. That's my favorite time to use it, is when playoff baseball starts right around this time. Big game, pour something in it, beer, water, whatever, and drink from it. And after you do use it, hand wash, air dry. I had one guy that was putting water in it and putting it on his bedside and using it for like his water glass at night. I wouldn't suggest that, but like, whatever. I mean, if you love the game of baseball, let's do it. Let's drink from bats even in the middle of the night. Why not?
Sure. Jeff, how did you find out about them? You just Google it?
I think I heard you on somewhere on a podcast, maybe somewhere else. And I just, Googled it and found Dugout Mugs.
Another podcast?
I know, right?
Shame, shame, shame.
I know.
Just cheating.
So Randall, your bats that you're getting, are they all used bats? Or I would think that, you know, a lot of those bats get cracked or whatever, so that you'd need to actually maybe get some new ones or something. Like, what are you using?
Now, the initial idea was dreamt up that, like, every time Mariano Rivera were to break a bat, we would take it and we'd convert it into a drinking mug. It's not very scalable. In the beginning, that's what I was doing in my backyard, but it's not, once you start selling at a certain scale, it just doesn't work that way. What we're doing now is we're working with a partner up in Quebec City that's a bat manufacturer, and we're just using the wood that otherwise would just be considered scrap wood to turn out barrels and turn them into mugs.
Also, on your website, you have your About Us section and your team. And what I love about it is the stories, you know, of short stories of your people who work with you and their favorite quotes. I just happen to be a quote person. I love looking at that, and you know, some of these great. And so you have a great customer service team. I've been conversing with Todd Grassley, who's been very helpful. Great. Yes, it just looks like you have a terrific team with you.
Yeah, it's been really intriguing. The past. So when I first started this company, I wanted to hopefully recreate what it felt like to be in a locker room or a dugout. And surprisingly, within reason, nobody really has ever played baseball before that works for Dugout Mugs, which seems like that wouldn't be the case. Obviously, Blaze is an exception. And then the guy that runs our marketing played college ball. But if you looked at the split of how many people played baseball versus not played baseball, I mean, 5% of our, not even a 2% of our employees played baseball and the rest didn't. But what's been intriguing over the past 5 or 6 years is that there's kind of been this tone that was set in the very beginning at the very top. And we've created this culture that kind of self-police. And if you're an asshole and you walk into Dugout Mugs and you try to work for us, well, first off, getting us hiring is unlikely, but like if it accidentally does happen and it creeps into what we've built as the foundation of our culture, you're not lasting for more than a week there, because people will just weed you out really quickly. They'll come and say, hey, this isn't a good fit. And then what ends up happening is we grow, and as we grow, that all gets self-policed, and just more good people just continue to pile into us. And it just becomes more of just a machine that just hums. Yeah. I mean, I'm really, really blessed and fortunate that we have assembled what feels like just kind of a group of just like gritty outcasts but we all just get along, and it's just like, it just works. So yeah, I'm really proud of what we've built on as far as the team goes.
That's great. Amazing. I see you also hired a Vietnam veteran who's the head of your laser technician. So, thank him. Do me a favor. Thank him for his service from us. How much fun are you having there?
Yeah, I'm having a ton of fun. It's a hard balance of things of like, it's a constant battle with grip strength. I want to have a ton of fun, but at the same time, you got to keep your eye on the ball, so to speak. So I don't want to grip the business so tight that I choke it and it suffocates, but I also don't want to loosen my grip so much that it just kind of just flutters away. As much as I like want to step back and have more fun in the moment, I'm still really, really dedicated and almost to a fault sick about just growing a business profitably. And that's usually what takes the front seat to anything and everything else. And both can exist, I assume. Like, you can have fun and you can be wildly profitable, but I haven't found that perfect blend yet.
Are you always looking for new ideas?
Ideas in the sense of like looking for ways of diversifying our channels, or diversifying ways of getting the product in front of people at a really cheap cost. Ideas in that sense. As far as like product ideas, for the time being, I think we have a product mix right now. We might do a few more things with the stainless steel side of things, but I think we're at a product mix right now that we should just get really down and dirty on, just getting really deep into what we have. And if we keep adding products to the mix and getting wider and wider, I think it's going to slow us down. I think we're ready to just go into hyperspeed of just going really, really deep.
It looks like the metal bat mugs are perfect for the car.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the thing, is like nobody's taking the wood mug anywhere. You know, it's either on a shelf or they're bringing it out for the big game. Like I was saying, it's staying home. What we hope to accomplish with the metal mug is the travel ball parent or the travel ball kid can take that into the dugout or take it onto a road trip to a baseball tournament or something like that. And we hope to really crack that code and kind of get rid of the beer centricness that our company's had. And hopefully the metal mug's able to do that.
I'm just wondering when you're going to go on Shark Tank and Mark Cuban's going to offer to buy the whole company, which he's been known to do.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, maybe, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine you go from this idea to now, like you said, you've got a major staff now. You have people that are, you know, relying on this company to basically, it's their livelihood. So I could definitely see, you know, when Jeff asked you about fun and everything, I could see trying to find a balance between the two, because you are now Mr. Business, you know. And but at the same time, I get the feeling that you like to just be mellow and just let the business, let people have at these mugs, which are quite incredible. They really are. They're really nice to look at, I got to tell you.
Appreciate that. Yeah, it's not in my nature to micromanage anybody. I want everybody to be themselves within the company. And I think that helps with growth whenever you don't have to constantly give directions. You kind of just give people direction and then trust that they're going to go in the right direction of things. So yeah, I would definitely say that I give enough of a leash, but also I'm really, really dedicated to doing this right and doing things with excellence. And that kind of, I hope that rubs off on people that are involved in helping grow the company.
And also, Jeff, you were talking about the quotes, right? Randall's quote is very apropos. It's not about what it is, it's about what it can become, Dr. Seuss.
Yes.
and you know, I look at a baseball bat and I just see a baseball bat.
Yeah.
Randall, before we let you go, I mentioned the website dugoutmugs.com. Do you have Instagram, Twitter? What are your other social media?
Yeah, we're active on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook. Not so much TikTok. It's going to be a new thing that we're going to try to dabble in. And also LinkedIn. We're there. All under Dugout Mugs. If you just search Dugout Mugs, you'll be able to find us.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. I encourage everyone to check out the website, order these mugs. I mean, they're just beautiful. And you know, like Randall said, it could be a decoration. You can use it as a cup, the custom mug, the metal mugs, you know, used for the car. So we wish you the best of luck. Thank you for coming on with us.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Have a great night.
Good night. Thank you very much, Randall.
Thank you, Randall Thompson. I only wish there was once an author, And he read a book, and the biggest compliment that he could give that author, and I can't remember who it was exactly, somebody will know, but he said, "I wish I had written that." Well, with Randall Thompson, I wish I had thought of that.
Exactly. You can go to their website, dugoutmugs.com, and you can see their selection. They have it for every team, including the Cleveland Guardians. So they're up to date with all their merchandise. Wow. So they have even the Cleveland Guardians merchandise. So check them out, dugoutmugs.com. You know, check out the website. They do customing. They have metal bat mugs. They have some gifts under $30. Check it out. You won't be disappointed.
Well, Jeff, I'm not disappointed that we had this show. That was a terrible segue, wasn't it? You won't be disappointed. I'm not disappointed. Right. I am disappointed at one thing, is that we have to say goodbye.
Yes, we do.
So this particular episode, which is episode 113, would like to just say thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you to our guests. We will be back before the new year, of course. We will have another episode at least before the year ends. But I just thought I would say thank you to everyone, just in that kind of spirit.
You're making me tear up.
And you know what? I'd like to thank the poet, Shel Krakowski, the musician, Dave Dresser, because they have written not only our intro song, but this song, Ace and Bobo, which we are going to go out with. Everyone, we'll see you on episode 114.
See ya.
Pages. Thank you.